You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
You've heard it before. Save a life. Donate blood. But for our pets, myriad reasons exist that may require a blood transfusion for a dog or cat. But where does your veterinarian obtain it? They can't just phone up the local Red Cross and request a unit. Are there such things as blood types? Can your pet be a donor? And does a pup get a milk bone after donating? Dr. Sean Owens is a board-certified veterinary pathologist and associate director of the Veterinary Medical Teaching Hospital Laboratory Services at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. For the next half hour, we're going to learn about veterinary transfusion medicine. So, sit, stay, and listen to this message. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Petco, where the pets go. Petco, where the pets go.
Pet Life Radio has tail wagging, fur flying, fabulous deals for our listeners from Petco. Get $6 off your order of $60 or more and up to 40% off the entire Petco site.
That's right.
But that's not all.
Because you're a Pet Life Radio listener, you'll also get free shipping on your order of $49 or more. $6 off, up to 40% off,
and free shipping
from Pet Life Radio and Petco. To get these awesome deals, go to PetcoDeals.com. That's PetcoDeals.com.
Petco, where the pets go.
I'm not much of a reader, but I do wish I were more well-read.
There are so many great books coming out. I wish I could find a way to keep up.
Audible.com makes it easy to stay well informed and catch up on your reading simply by listening. Audiobooks from Audible turn downtime into uptime. You'll be more productive and become well read.
Now I'm able to catch up on all the great books I've been wanting to read.
With Audible, I feel smarter.
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold membership plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to audibledeals.com. That's audibledeals.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Sean Owens, thank you for being with us today. I think this is a subject a lot of people, myself included, don't know a lot about.
Well, thank you for having me. No, it's a relatively new field of veterinary medicine, and it's ironic in the sense that if you've known anyone that's had a transfusion, a person that is, or if you've had one yourself, you really need to thank a dog. Because about 350 years ago, there was an English physician by the name of Richard Lower who performed what we believe is the first known transfusion. It was from dog to dog. And because of that, what we know today is what the American Red Cross and all the human transfusion services do has grown out of essentially veterinary medicine.
Well, One World, One Health started way back when. Now, wasn't it also another English physician, William Harvey, who first discovered the pathway that blood took?
He did, you know, and it's ironic when we think about the advances we've made in medicine now that, you know, something as simple as understanding how the heart beats and how it circulates blood throughout the body, it seemed so revolutionary at the time. And that really set the stage for, again, Richard Lower to start doing his stuff. And it really set it on a trajectory of using animals in transfusion medicine to get to where we are now in veterinary medicine. We've come leaps and bounds over where we were. It started with dogs initially, dog being transfused to dog, and then they decided that, well, perhaps we could transfuse the blood of lambs into people to instill some of those calming qualities, and that proved not to be very successful, not surprisingly.
Probably rather disastrous. I was reading they also try to use things like beer, urine, milk, and as you're saying, other animal blood is like, really, putting beer right in your vein, not a great idea.
No. One would hope it would at least be a decent microbrew, but but ironically enough, for the many, many years, people just assumed that if it was a liquid, that it would have the same properties as blood. At least some of the folks early on decided, at least if it was the right color being red, that it might work. But
so good many, Merlot. Many
things. Yeah, a good, that would probably even be better as a good Merlot.
So people listening to the introduction saying that you're a clinical pathologist want to back up a couple steps. Oftentimes people say, what's a pathologist and are there subspecialties in pathology? Because you are a clinical pathologist. What do you do?
Well, that's a good question. So I guess the first place to start would be a pathologist is, if anyone's old enough to remember Quincy MD, the pathologist on the TV show, pathologists in human and veterinary medicine are people that do autopsies or necropsies. So they really study either an animal's body or a human body after death to determine the reasons why that animal or person may have died. A clinical pathologist is a person that studies disease before the person hopefully has died. We deal with laboratory medicine, so we look at red blood cells, we look at the chemistry, how your organs are functioning. And one of the big things that we do, both in veterinary and human medicine, is that we work with blood banks. And I'm actually the medical director for the blood bank, the veterinary blood bank at the University of California at the Veterinary Medical Teaching Hospital. And it's really a subspecialty of pathology that works with our clients, for the most part, are veterinarians, as opposed to your normal veterinarian whose client is an animal owner.
So you work with a blood bank, and I think a lot of people would be surprised to go, wow, I had no idea there were blood banks. You know, they think of blood and they think maybe the Red Cross. But if we give them a background, blood, all right, it takes oxygen around. Probably most people know that. Why is blood so important? Why is it vital to life?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I think what a lot of people don't know, one is that there are veterinary blood banks, and two, that there are dogs and cats and horses and cows all across the country that go without blood products, much to their detriment every day in this country because there's not enough animal blood to go around. It's not uncommon for us to get phone calls from people that have shortages, that have an animal that needs blood desperately. What blood has within it are red blood cells, which do carry oxygen, but there are also white blood cells that help fight infection and disease. There are platelets, which are small little fragments that involve with blood clotting. So if you ever cut yourself, one of the things that helps stop that bleeding is the platelets show up and they form a little plug to prevent bleeding from that vessel. And there's also some proteins in the liquid component of blood that many animals need because either their liver's not making it anymore or they're losing it. So there are a multitude of products within one unit of blood. So when you actually donate blood yourself, you have the potential to save 5 or 6 individuals' lives just with one donation.
Transfusion medicine is something, and when I graduated from Davis, I have a feeling I made it to most of my classes, but I don't remember them really talking about transfusion medicine. So this seems to be a fairly new field in veterinary medicine. Is that correct?
It is. You know, surprisingly, as we talked about earlier, veterinary medicine really started human transfusion medicine, but it wasn't until about the mid to late 80s that the National Institute of Health gave 5 grants to 5 universities. One of those veterinary schools was University of Pennsylvania, specifically to develop textbooks and the literature for veterinary transfusion medicine, meaning that how can we best move this discipline forward to support animal health. And since that time, well, I guess we're looking at about almost 30 years now, it's been phenomenal what has occurred. At the time, there was maybe 1 or 2 individuals that had specialty or expertise in this in the country, and now there's probably 10 people that all know each other and train many of the veterinary students. When I was a veterinary student, I graduated 15 years ago, I had a 1-hour lecture on transfusion medicine, and that was it. And now in our curriculum here at UC Davis, we probably... arguably, they think we give them too much, but we probably give them 5 or 6 hours of laboratories and lectures on how to give transfusions, what blood products are appropriate, and so that when you bring your animal into the veterinarian, they are much better trained in transfusion medicine.
So, Dr. Owens, I think most people listening to this would go, okay, transfusions. I can see the need for blood if, for instance, my dog or cat were to be hit by a car and be losing a lot of blood, or during surgery, which we always try to make it as blood-free as possible, sometimes an animal just loses blood in that situation. What are some of the other reasons you see and you teach your students as to why a pet is going to need a transfusion?
Well, certainly the trauma, like you mentioned, is probably the biggest one we see. The other things that we commonly see as animals get older is either cancer, bloodborne disease like leukemia is one of the common ones that we can see. A bloodborne neoplastic process or tumor or cancer can certainly cause the bone marrow to stop producing red blood cells. So in those situations, we do have some patients that while they're going through chemotherapy and treatment for their cancer, they do need transfusion of red blood cells and sometimes platelets and other components of the blood. One of the more common ones that we also see is, unfortunately, as animals also get older, they will suffer from kidney failure or kidney disease. And the kidney plays a vital role in telling the body how many red blood cells to make or not make. And when the kidney becomes diseased or ill and no longer functions, it can't tell the bone marrow how to make more red blood cells anymore. So those patients often require transfusion support or blood transfusions until we can either get the kidney problem under control or in some instances, if it's a chronic problem, they may need transfusion support throughout the rest of their life.
I know a couple of situations that I've seen where I've needed to reach for some blood is an animal, for instance, that gets into rat bait. And rat bait has become so strong, so potent, that even if they're not directly eating the bait, but for instance, a cat is playing outside and happens to eat a mouse that is dying and not running away from it too quickly because it is dying internally of this rat bait, which I think simplistically, I would just say, causes it to have a clean death, acting somewhat like a hemophiliac, just bleeding to death internally. And then I just had one the other day where a pet had pancreatitis, inflammation of the pancreas, and the blood transfusion just really seemed to support it. It felt better.
You're absolutely right. And it's I think you bring up a very interesting point in that, you know, 30 years ago when you're practicing veterinary medicine, it was less sophisticated in terms of transfusion, meaning that most folks would keep a dog or a cat around the clinic just to be able to bleed them and give blood in an emergency. And it was really a crude way of providing that level of care for people's animals. And because of, I think, partially the internet and our degree of expertise and sophistication, I think it's fair and right that most pet owners want the same level of care for their animals today that they do for themselves. And the veterinary blood banks that have been developed now allow veterinarians to reach into the refrigerator and pull out a unit of blood that has been well screened, that is guaranteed safe, and is readily available, and do the testing and cross-matching to make sure it's compatible with the patient, and then give it. And what we're seeing is that the outcome of those results with veterinarians such as yourself who are able to have the products they need to treat people's animals secondary to rodenticide toxicity improves the outcome immeasurably. And at the end of the day, what's most important is sending someone's family member, four-legged family member, home with them healthy, happy, and safe. And this is helping do that.
You mentioned something about cross-matching and blood types. And yes, when I was in veterinary school, and I have to admit, we were always taught, I was under the impression that, okay, you could kind of get away with that first blood transfusion. You know, you just get that big friendly dog that, you know, one of the technicians has at home, bring it on in, big kid, get a blood sample, give it to the dog or cat or dog to dog, cat to cat, and it'll be fine. You didn't have to worry about the first transfusion. You were kind of home free. But the second one, you needed to be concerned about. So number one, we're saying, yes, there are blood types. Are there such things as universal donors for cats and dogs? So you can have that one dog that, I got to keep this dog or cat around.
Oh, you've raised an area that we could have a panel discussion and an argument debate on, depending on who we get. But I'll start with the easy one first. As you just mentioned, yes, animals do have blood types, and the simplest are probably cats. Cats have three blood types, A, B, and AB, very similar to what people have. Because cats have antibodies within their blood, meaning that they have proteins for the most part that are directed against things that are foreign to them within their blood, there is no universal donor in a cat. So if a cat's blood type A, you have to give them blood type A. It goes all the way up in level of sophistication to horses, which horses are comparable to people in their level of sophistication, meaning that if you mapped out all of the different possibilities of blood types in horses, you could have 600,000 different individual horses with different blood types or different permutations of blood types, very similar to what people have.
Huh.
Dogs are a little simpler, and you're right. You know, the old philosophy of each dog got the first transfusion free worked because dogs don't have important antibodies that are pre-existing in them, so they don't have that. But after exposure to blood, different blood than their own, they can develop those so that the next transfusion animal gets can be very dangerous. Because of that, what we've moved towards is exactly what would happen if you needed a blood transfusion in the hospital. And what we do is we then, if your dog needs a transfusion, we find out what their blood type is, and then we choose a donor that has the same blood type. And knowing that no animal is 100% compatible, we want the most compatible. So we mix the two bloods together in the laboratory to determine, if we put them together, is there any incompatibilities that we're going to see? And if not, then we call them cross-match compatible, and then that usually results in a safe transfusion.
Now, is this something that we always need to send in? Because, again, this is probably prehistoric veterinary medicine. I was taught you get a little blood from one animal, one from the donor, one from the recipient. You put it on a slide, you mix it together, and then you watch and see if they get these little clumps forming under the microscope. Same way it's done? Or is it?
Sure
it's much more sophisticated.
No, you're almost spot on. The technology's changed a little bit in that it's made it a little more automated, so it is now within the reach of even the smallest veterinary practice, but the technique is still the same. What we're really looking for is those little clumps you're talking about, to see if those little clumps occur in the slide or in the laboratory, then they're probably going to occur in the patient, and that would mean that blood is not compatible. So the technology has really been our friend in terms of getting these types of practice and therapy into the hands of the smallest veterinary practitioner, whereas before you had to send it off, and oftentimes if an animal was hit by a car, you didn't have a day to wait before you got these lab results back before you could give blood. And now most veterinary hospitals and even small practices have the technology to find out within 5-10 minutes whether or not this is an appropriate compatible match for the patient, and then deliver the blood safely.
Well, you're not going to have to wait 5 or 10 minutes for this continuation of my conversation with Dr. Sean Owens from UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, talking about transfusional medicine. But please stay tuned for this short break. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Introducing the new Brett Michaels Pets Rock Collection, exclusively at PetSmart. I created it for the pets that rock your world.
Shop the Brett Michaels Pets Rock Collection and celebrate PetSmart's 25th anniversary with up to 25% off thousands of items on the PetSmart site. Plus, free shipping on orders of $49 or more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com. That's PetSmartDeal.com. PetSmartDeal.com.
Dyson.
The new Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radio root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. To order your Dyson Animal Vac, go to DysonDeals.com. DysonDeals.com to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Dyson, music to your ears.
Hi, I'm Lisa Smith Putnam, the host of the new and exciting show, Your Pets, My Dogs, here on Pet Life Radio. Your Pets, My Dogs will feature celebrity interviews, we'll talk to everyday pet owners, and more. Listen, I am here to entertain you each and every week, right here on Pet Life Radio. Again, that's Your Pets, My Dogs. I'm your host, Lisa Smith Putnam.
Your Pets, My Dogs.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Owens, this is really very fascinating. And I think one of the concerns people always have, of course, when they're getting a transfusion is this blood clean? Is it safe? Am I going to get a disease? The same concerns need to be held with veterinary medicine. What are some of the diseases that need to be screened for to make sure that this is going to be a wholesome sample or wholesome product that's being given to a pet?
Well, it's interesting that that's partially dependent upon the part of the country you're in, but some of the veterinary specialty organizations, especially the internal medicine group, have come out with position statements as well as the blood bankers to say these are the diseases that must be screened for all animals, and certainly heartworm disease is one of them. The diseases that are carried by ticks are some of the other ones, and depending upon which part of the country you're in, some of them are more or less prevalent. Certainly Lyme disease, leishmaniasis, which used to be a disease confined to the area surrounding the Mediterranean, has been seen in the United States, so that has recently been added to the list. And
your pet may look healthy, correct?
Yeah, oh, that is absolutely correct. Yes. Some of these diseases, you may not even know your patient is carrying, or your animal or your dog or cat are carrying them.
So they're screened for the diseases.
Well, we err on the side of caution in the sense that here at the university, we test for just about every infectious disease that could be transmitted through the blood. And also we have an outpatient donor program. We have the second largest, next to the University of Pennsylvania, outpatient blood donor program in the country. And for the people that participate in our program, we provide them with flea control and tick control, heartworm preventative, and we test their blood every year, and they get a physical exam every time they donate. So in exchange for them giving us blood to save lives here at the hospital, we repay them by doing everything we can to ensure that their dog or cat, primarily dog, stays safe and healthy.
So I have to admit, and I don't do this with any pride, I have never donated blood. I know I should. It's on my list because there's concern that needle looks really huge. So I have taken blood from cats and dogs in the past, and they seem to be much braver than we are. If you could explain how a blood sample is drawn, how a pet donates blood, what's the procedure?
Well, in the spirit of full disclosure, I have to make you feel a little bit better that and that I've been running a blood donor program for a long time now, and I'm petrified of needles, and the first time I tried to give blood, I passed out. So I'm a poor candidate for that. But fortunately, our dogs are much more stoic. Initially, we screen a dog to see whether or not they we use a small needle to get a small blood sample, and we have a wonderful group of individuals that work for us that are the heart and soul of our program that are able to ascertain whether or not a dog wants to be part of our program. We don't force a dog to give blood. The ones we want are the ones that come in, look forward to getting the treat, sit there. We stick we use the same equipment they use for people, and we use a vein in the neck to get the blood. And it takes about 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes for the procedure to collect it. And for the most
but
part,
for us, they don't use a vein in our neck. It's a vein in our arm.
Vein in our arm, yes. The vein in the dog's arms are a little too small for, they'd have to sit there a long time. And they get fidgety after a while. They're sort of like kids, you know. They're willing to do what you ask them to do, but they want you to do it quickly. And we do it pretty quickly. And you know, we can tell when our donors come through the door because they get drugged down the halls. They drag their owners down the hall because they're happy to be here. And that's really what we want with the program. And that's the nice response to see.
So you get this blood. Now you have this blood. What you said earlier that you and I donating blood, that one unit of blood can save 5 lives. Mm-hmm. Fractionization, I know, is important in veterinary medicine as well as human medicine, where you take these particles, you're talking about the red blood cells, white blood cells. What else can be taken from a unit of blood?
Well, that's interesting. You know, it's in veterinary medicine and human medicine, there are lots of things that we can replace in the body, that drugs are chemical-wise to make you feel better or correct a deficiency. But we haven't found a great replacement for blood yet. So it's so valuable that to give a patient all of the components of blood really prevents some other patients from getting what they need. So we split it down into red blood cells. So we separate, we pull off the liquid component, and we pull off the platelets and everything else, and we just make red blood cells. And then we have platelets, which are involved in clotting for animals that have a bleeding problem. And then we have plasma. And then we make some fancy stuff called cryoprecipitate, which is more of a specific product for animals that have a specific bleeding deficiency. And we can also pull off some of the white blood cells if we need to give those as well. And we like to split it down because, as you just said, one dog can affect the lives of 5 others by breaking it into smaller components. And we hate to give any one animal, unless it's indicated, the whole unit, because then it does prevent other animals from receiving what they need.
In the past, they've tried the blood, urine, beer as a substitute. And now I know they have a product that is a hemoglobin-based oxygen substitute, artificial blood. Does it really work?
It does. They tried for many, many years to create hemoglobin. It's the component within red blood cells that actually carries the oxygen. And the red blood cell is nothing more than the car that drives hemoglobin around through the body, dropping oxygen off at different places. And so they've tried to use hemoglobin in and of itself to put into the patient, whether it's human or animal, and then let that collect oxygen and move around. But it gets broken down very quickly. So it doesn't last very long. It's a stopgap measure in order to keep a patient from dying when whole blood is not available or red cells aren't available. It doesn't last nearly as long as a red blood cell. You know, if I put my red blood cells into you, they should last about half as long as they normally would if they were inside of me, because they're mildly incompatible for the most part. And that doesn't happen with the oxyglobin. People have come back to it and tried to revisit it, but it will never be as good, I don't think, as regular blood.
And probably one of the most important questions, will vampires drink it?
I think they probably would. You know, it's probably, if you don't have any garlic, just leave some of that on your front porch, and I think you're probably going to, you know, steer them off the track.
Sounds good. You've been talking also about transfusion reactions. What are some of the reactions? I know sometimes you'll have a bit of a rash, and you can also have a vaccine or transfusion reaction that can end in death. What causes that reaction to occur?
Well, there are a couple different things that can occur for the reactions. The most severe is when you give incompatible blood. For example, the best example would be a cat. So we said that cats have three blood types, A, B, and AB. If you take a B cat that needs a transfusion, you put A cat blood into them, that cat is going to recognize that this is foreign blood, and it's going to attack those red blood cells, it's going to destroy them. And in the process of destroying them, that whole process can run out of hand and can lead to the death of the patient because of such acute inflammation and a systemic disease process that can actually lead to the death of the patient. That's the most severe thing that we can see, and that's the biggest reason why we do cross-matching and blood typing. There are slightly less severe reactions, as you talked about, hives or itchiness, that are reactions to either proteins within the blood or the white blood cells themselves. And the body on a lesser level recognizes and say, hey, this isn't normal, this is not mine, and mount a little bit of a response to it, but nothing that's typically life-threatening. Usually we see some itchiness or a few hives, and usually if we give some Benadryl or an anti-inflammatory, that goes away and we're able to get the blood into the patient. But the severity of the reaction is based upon the degree of incompatibility. And again, that's why we want to ensure that every patient that gets blood is receiving compatible blood.
You had talked a little earlier about which candidates are appropriate to be blood donors. You know, you want that happy pet, the one that's dragging the owner down the hallway because, woohoo, I get a dog bone when I get finished with this, and nice, friendly people. Cats usually aren't so happy to come in. And I was reading up, and they were saying that you really didn't want to have a pet that was pregnant or had produced a litter. Why so?
Well, the reason being is that anytime for people, for humans, for women, or for female dogs or cats, anytime you're pregnant, there's the possibility that either the infant in the case of people or the puppies or kittens inside the dog or cat, that their blood can potentially commingle with the mom's circulation. And because, well, frequently children as well as puppies and kittens have different blood types than their parent or their mother, I should say, that can create antibodies in the mom. And those antibodies, if we transfuse them into another patient or a recipient that has that blood type that mom has antibodies against, we'll get that severe reaction that we're worried about. And so we typically confine it to animals that haven't been pregnant for that very reason.
People listening to this may go, you know, I have this great dog, I have a great cat, I would love to get involved and have my pet be a donor, help save other lives. I donate blood myself, so I want my pet to do it also. But I don't live close to UC Davis. What can these folks do?
Well, you would be surprised at the number of small in-house donor programs that your veterinary hospitals have. And I think one of the most wonderful phone calls to receive as a veterinarian in a small practice is one of your clients calling and saying, hey, my dog is 55 pounds or greater, which we typically look for. You know them, they're healthy, they receive their shots, I'm into you all the time, and I'd like to offer my services as a blood donor, my dog and I. And it's a wonderful call to receive, because oftentimes small practitioners, because of the shortage of commercial blood, have to rely on well-screened in-house blood donors that are part of their practice. And so if you have a dog that you're too far away from one of the big university practices or another blood bank, would be to call your veterinarian and say, hey, do you have a need and can I participate? And one of the nice things that I really like about talking to our donors that come in here with their dogs is that people love their animals. They love veterinary medicine, and they love finding a way to get involved. And, you know, when our folks come in here and they're waiting briefly in the waiting room and they're having discussions with people whose animals are ill here, and, you know, the conversation I've overheard goes, why are you here? And, well, I'm here because my dog's a blood donor. The smile on their face and just seeing the positive feelings and the way they glow, knowing that I'm here to help your dog, is something that's priceless. It is a way that most folks can become involved in veterinary medicine and veterinary hospitals and have such a positive, dramatic impact on what happens.
I was reading in one of our veterinary journals, and I'm not sure where in the United States this took place, but I thought, what a fabulous idea. It was a combination of a human blood bank campaign mixed with veterinary medicine. So they went into, I believe it was a veterinary hospital, community-based, and dogs and cats went one way. You know, they were screened. They had their blood drawn. Owners went the other way. They donated their blood. They got their cookie. The other got their dog biscuit, kitty treat. And I thought, what a fabulous way for the entire family to help out others. You're really banking some love and banking some life.
You know, it's funny you mention that, and coincidental, in that we have a meeting tomorrow with a local news station who had that very same idea, and they contacted the Human Blood Bank and contacted us and said, hey, we would like to do this. We think it's beneficial for people and animals. Would you be interested in doing it? So we're actually in the early stages of setting up exactly what you described, because for all the reasons you said, it sounds like a wonderful way to sort of share that wealth with animals and people.
Well, Dr. Sean Owens of UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, thank you so much for being with us today. I've learned a lot. I have a feeling the listeners have also learned a lot. So, Sean, you and I need to buck up, go out there, let's try it. Donate that blood. Those that are listening right now, your cat or dog, if you think they're a good candidate, call your veterinarian. See if maybe your pet can help save a life by donating some blood. So thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week with some more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.